It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Andy's here. Renee's here. Dalrymple's here. Yep, we're going to talk about the new Windows. Well, actually, we'll talk a little bit about the new Windows laptop, but mostly we'll talk about the new Apple TV, Apple quarterly results coming up in just a few minutes and a whole lot more. Stay tuned. It's going to be fun. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 478, recorded Tuesday, October 27th, 2015. The Minimal Delightful Product. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Drobo, a family of safe and expandable yet easy-to-use storage arrays. Drobos are designed to protect your important data forever. Visit Drobo.com/twit and use the code TWIT100 to save $100 off a Drobo Mini, Drobo 4-Bay, or Drobo 5N. And by Texture, the mobile app that lets you access the world's most popular magazines anytime, anywhere, using your phone or tablet. For your free 30-day trial, visit texture.com/MacBreak. And by Unity, the free home media server. Stream your media and files from any computer you own to your iOS devices. For more information and to download Unity for free, visit getunity.com/twit. That's getyounity.com/twit. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show where we talk about the Mac Break Weekly. Every week on this show with Mac Break Weekly and Andy Iannacco from the Chicago Sun-Times.
Hello.
Hello.
How are you today?
And apparently the Hayward Fire Department.
Yes. That's still one of my favorite caps. I did someone's, I can't remember the fellow's name, but he's a firefighter, and he sent me this hat, which I love, and also actual like firefighter like sweatshirt gear. Like, I think they call it a job shirt or a work shirt.
Oh, cool.
And it is the warmest thing I own. The problem is, though, I have to, like, sometimes I'm just wearing this around the office, and then I'm wearing, like, the work shirt because I'm just, you know, cold inside the house. That also has the logo on it. Then I'll say, that's right, I need to go to FedEx or something. Then I'll go out, and then someone will think I'm a firefighter. And say, no, I'm not a firefighter. And no, I'm not pretending to be a firefighter. I did a podcast for this nice book. I'm sorry. Here's $80. Please forget this happened.
Also joining us right now, the lovely and talented Renee Ritchie.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Hey, you're not at home. Where are you?
No, I am traveling. It was too cold at home, so I left. I abandoned.
Well, where do you want to say where you are, or is it a secret?
No, I'm in the Bay Area. I couldn't make it up there, Sally. I was hoping I would make it up there, but I finished too late.
You're in the Bay Area. I'm mad at you. I'm so mad.
I know. I tried. Mad.
Well, welcome.
I think someone has a briefing with Twitter that he can't talk about.
Twitter. The Twitter wants to talk to you. Well, it's nice to have you. Also, Jim Dalrymple, he is sporting a chapeau as well, just to fit in.
Chapeau on the top and the bottom of my hat.
And the bottom. What is the hat there? That's looks like you've been wearing that Bruins hat since 1924.
Never heard of the
Pretty
Bruins.
Pretty much.
I love it.
Boston Bruins, baby.
Oh, man. You know, it's funny because I was talking to a guy from Scotland on the radio show. I had a great Scots accent. And I said, well, tell me now, what's your favorite football team? He says, I know what it was. I said, I'm sorry, you lost by a point in the Rugby World Cup to the Australians. He said, I don't care about that. I'm a Bruins fan. Which I thought was a little odd, but hey, you're a Canadian Bruins fan. It's okay. Great to have you. And we are all wearing hats today, except for you, Renee. You might want to look in your closet there.
I'm not wearing a hat at a protest for the Springboks losing to the All Blacks.
Ah. Yeah. I hate it when that happens.
I know.
That haka gets to them. That's intimidating, man.
They should just do the Zulu dance to counter it. I'm sure the Zulu dance would beat the haka, but they don't want to break it out.
So I'm wearing, in honor of the new Twit chapeau, the folks at Fezorama decided to branch out a little bit, and they're now making something they call a chapeau. And it's not quite a fez. It still has a tassel, and this is the official Twit one. And I think that's pretty nifty. And actually, it was Andy, you
brought this to my attention. You saw them at a Comic-Con.
Yep.
And I immediately ordered one for all of you, so you will be all getting your Christmas chapeau, a new tradition.
Best boss ever.
I ain't your boss. I am using something a little bit different today. I am not using my official MacBook as I often do.
Is this heresy, Leo? Are you going to commit heresy right on the show?
Kind of is heresy. But I was really intrigued after reading the Wired magazine article about the new Microsoft Surface Book, and that's what I have right here, because it was so clear in the Wired article that Panos Panay and his team really had one and only one goal, which was to take on the MacBook. It was like there was a burr under their saddle. They even wanted to duplicate Apple's design team. The Wired article goes into their secret design room with the CNC millers and all of the different 3D printers where they're worrying away making prototypes. And they talked about the prototypes that they made.
Was it like the Dell trailer, Leo? Was it like the Michael Dell trailer?
Yeah, it was very much kind of that bizarro Johnny Ive. And they did come up with something, as you know, you've probably all seen the videos and our unboxing and stuff. They came up with something very unusual, especially with that hinge. But it was a couple of things that I was interested in. One is 3x2, which is something Apple doesn't do except on their iPads. It's a kind of a non-traditional shape for laptops. It's old-fashioned, and I kind of like it. I first experienced it on a Chromebook Pixel, and I kind of like it. But the other thing they do, which is I think more important to people who use Macs and more of an interest, is it's a touchscreen. And I have used several touchscreen Windows machines now. And I feel like the more I use it, the more I wish Apple would do one. I guess that's what I should say. This is also interesting. When you read the article, they designed a laptop that looked, frankly, a lot like a MacBook. And then they said, well, what can we do that's different? And really, for purposes of being different than really, I think, people how people use it, they said, we should be able to do this. Good. Pull back a little bit again. I'm going to push this magic button. There's a click, and then you can take the top off. Now, it's not the first convertible we've ever seen, but this is like kind of like the iPad Pro. It's a 13-inch 3x2 tablet. But in order to do this, they had to do all sorts of weird stuff. Like, this has its own battery, obviously, which makes it quite heavy. And it also means that it's top heavy. And so that's why they had to do the weird hinging thing to spread the base out so the thing wouldn't just flop over. They had to all make all these sacrifices. They also, and again, I have to think this is a shot against Apple's bow. They call this the pen, and it has an eraser. So, it's not a pencil.
Pencils are supposed to have erasers, and pens aren't.
It's not a pencil. It's a pen. And I'm going to use the – it's not – I haven't played with the Pro yet, as I know you have, all three of you, I think, played with the iPad Pro. This is a paint program that comes with it. And I think the latency is a little bit higher than it is on the Pro. But it's still kind of cool to be able to do this. And this is something you can't do.
Here, I'll show you a product camera if that's maybe a little bit more.
To do that, yeah. On the – there you go. It really is kind of quite a bit like erasing. Tiger, tiger, burning bright. But there is, this doesn't seem too latent to me. I wish you were here, Renee, because you're the graphic design guy. You're the artist, and you probably have more of an opinion.
I tried one. They had one at the shopping mall the other day, and I went in and tried it. And it felt very Surface. I've used the previous Surface Books, and it felt very Surface Booky to me.
Like the Surface Pro, you mean, yeah.
Yeah. And Microsoft's been doing ink for a long time and pens for a long time, and they're really good at it. It's not quite the same as a pencil because Apple did that thing where you could turn it sideways and shade, and it's a very different experience.
Yeah, you don't have any of that capability here, yeah.
Yeah.
Although you do have interchangeable nubbies, which is
I hated those on the Wacom because I would forever lose them. I would just end up putting my favorite on there and keeping my favorite on.
Yeah, this just comes with one. You have to go out and buy the other ones. I do think this is kind of interesting. Anyway, I guess my main point is not so much I think this is a really interesting product, but I do have to say that there just sometimes feels like it's a very natural thing to touch the screen. You know,
to be a tablet, it has to be. Once you take the screen off, you have to have the touch.
There's no keyboard and mouse anymore. Yeah. But it's, right. But also, let me see if I can find something that Mr. Dalrymple would approve of.
AC/DC.
I'm looking. I don't have anything.
Come on, work with me.
It's a wide assortment of heavy metal that Jim will approve of.
Yeah, but I don't own any of it, unfortunately. this is Microsoft wow. Groove. Well, no, I do at home. This is just the stuff that's in Groove, right? So Sublime's the closest I can come. And I can't play any of it because it's all explicit. Yeah. But, yeah, I see. And then, of course, you have to put the on-off button on the lid and the speakers have to be on the lid. And there's all sorts of sacrifices you have to make. But I do think that it's a couple of things are interesting. One is that Microsoft was so driven by competition with the MacBook. When they decided to make a laptop, they didn't say, "Oh, let's beat Lenovo." They said, "Let's beat Apple." Which I thought
was very interesting. We won't put Spyro on it. There, we beat Lenovo.
Yeah, it wasn't that hard, was it?
Well, I mean, that's one of the great influences that Apple has over other companies. I mean, it really just shows you that there are people who are willing to spend extra money for something that really looks and feels great. And it also means that it illustrates, I wrote about this in the Sun-Times a couple weeks ago, it really illustrates one of the challenges that Microsoft has, where Microsoft is the only, Apple can basically make a decision and suddenly it's the most important decision that affects the entire product line. Microsoft, they can only suggest really, and then right. Dell and HP and the rest, they're going to go and make something that they can sell, you know, millions of to mostly corporate people and to users who don't have an emotional connection to their hardware. It's just the Toyota. They're just going to put the key in and go. So Microsoft is in the position where they have to build machines like this because no one else will. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
The first machine that really affected me as a laptop with a touchscreen was actually the first Chromebook Pixel. And even though it was not a detachable tablet, the fact that if you're using your phone for 3 or 4 hours and you're using a website, something in your brain makes you want to go out and touch something that's obviously a big touch button. And there are times where you just want to scroll just by resting your hand next to it and flicking your thumb. I don't think that Apple's being left behind by not having a touch in the desktop, but I do think they're maybe missing a trick.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jim.
I don't think it's needed.
I really don't.
No, okay. I don't. I mean, you know, Microsoft is trying to differentiate themselves in a way that I don't think is necessary.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people, when they sit down at a computer, I don't think that they really need to touch. I don't think that they need to do that. I don't think most people want to do that. It's not normal. So Microsoft went all in on this one operating system, you know, across all product lines. And I think that they made a mistake, but they went all in.
Well, it certainly hurt them with Windows 8.1. I think Windows 10 is interesting because they've gone back to the desktop metaphor. And you see a little bit of the tablet stuff, but not much. But I might disagree with you on the touch. I really have gotten both of the Chromebook Pixel and this. And I think it's because I use tablets. It seems natural not all the time to use touch at all. It's an adjunct to mousing and keyboarding. Every once in a while, there's a button you want to hit. Or you want to? There are times when the touch is a natural thing, even on the arm's length experience of a desktop computer.
What I find interesting is that Apple. It's not that Apple's not doing touch. It's just they're not doing direct touch on the desktop. They're doing a lot of gestures and force touch and force press, but they're doing it through the trackpad or they're doing it through the Magic Mouse, and it's intermediated, but it's in a position where you're used to for normal computing, and you're going through the trackpad to sort of touch objects, press into objects, press through them, swipe through them. People who use the iPad with a keyboard, sometimes they complain that they have to take their hands off because the iPad is getting much better now with iOS 9 and things like Command Tab and the shortcuts. But you sometimes have to take your hands off and then reach for the monitor. And that's not perfect either. So we're sort of in this interesting place now where these two, the touch of the tablet and the keyboard and mouse, I think are sort of coming together and everyone's trying to figure out what the optimal expression of both are.
But I just don't think that we're at the point where Microsoft thinks that we are or where they want us
to
be.
Jim, have you never reached out after using an iPad and touched your laptop, your screen?
No.
Never?
No.
God, I know so many people, including myself,
do that. Interesting because it has a keyboard and a touch screen, and people will have to, again, try to use both. And it's the size of a laptop now.
Yeah.
Well, it
seems odd to me. But then again, when you use a keyboard on an iPad and you have to take your hands off the keyboard and touch the screen to do things, I find that odd too. You know, I think that the mobile devices, like the iPad, should be used as an iPad, or at least that's how I feel most comfortable in using them. But when you throw in a keyboard, then it just gets kind of weird. And that's Microsoft's whole thing, you know, and I don't agree with the whole, you know, one operating system across the board. I don't think it's the right way to go.
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly Apple's plan is there's a touch-first operating system that's iOS.
Right.
And then there's a mouse operating system. I feel like the mousing operating system, even Apple feels like is maybe getting old-fashioned. I feel like Apple's starting to deprecate the desktop.
I'm glad it's there as an option, though. And also, it's just two such distinct philosophies about the direction of computing. I think that Apple's is really good in that it, you know, you're optimizing one experience for the tablet, one experience for the desktop, but it does assume that someone can either afford to have two separate devices or is even interested in having two separate devices. Microsoft's is optimized towards, we're going to sell you one device that is going to be a beautiful Intel Core i5, i7, or even Core M based desktop Windows machine that works great. Attaches to your nice 4K monitor, attaches to all these other sort of things. But when you need it to be a really lightweight, convenient tablet for gaming or for content creation or just even reading comic books, if you feel as though you're in a situation where you'd rather have a tablet, we're going to let you just simply pop off that screen or fold the screen backward and give you that experience. So we don't know who's going to win, but I think we're all agreed that the winner is the consumer when they get to choose between different attitudes as opposed to two or three companies trying to clone off each other.
Yeah, if you're going to copy Apple, at least innovate around it a little bit.
Well, copy forward is the metaphor, right? Like companies kind of they don't contribute anything, but companies, and Apple does that too.
Yeah,
Apple.
Right.
Yeah, they very seldom are the first person into a space, but they almost always are the first one to mainstream it, and they do that by copying for it. They take great ideas and they make them super accessible. And I think if you take that approach and you find what works best and you add the next thing to it, then you start to get a good synergy.
And I think that's exactly what we're all hoping for with the Apple TV when it comes out. You know, that Apple will have taken the ideas that they've used in the past and that other people have used, and that they will make this you know, a truly interactive type device that we're going to be able to use for TV.
Did you guys get on the internet about, I don't know, was it midnight? Was it shortly after midnight?
I set my alarm every hour to go off, Leo, because Apple wouldn't say when they were going to be available for pre-order.
Just said,
so it went off at 12, went off at 1, at 2, and at 5, I think 5:38 or something, they were finally available.
Yeah, because I gave up, and I got up at 6 in the morning on Monday morning, and I saw, and I ordered one, but I don't know if I'm going to get it by the end of the week.
You have to get rush shipping.
I did get rush shipping.
Okay, then you should get it by Friday.
I hope I will. That's not always the case. If you ordered it later in the day, right, they were sold out.
Did you remember to get the accessories, Leo?
Oh, crap. What accessories?
So you can only use one Siri remote with an Apple TV. It only pairs in a one-to-one relationship.
And it comes with that, right?
Yes, but if you want to do multiplayer gaming, you need either iOS devices or you need the MFI game controllers.
Okay, but we all have iPhones.
Of the Steel Series
gamepad. But you think an iPhone wouldn't be a good choice on the new Apple TV?
You know, the remote app, I'm presuming there'll be a new version of a remote app that'll let you do a lot of things. But I think for gaming, it's going to be the difference between using a glass surface and using an actual game-style gamepad.
I have to admit, when I really looked at the page and I saw what they're doing with this remote, the remote is the most interesting part of this, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And I did buy 64 gigs. I don't know if I don't know why. I just thought, well, it might need it.
So think of it as cash. The best way to think about it, because it's been confusing for some people, is that the Apple TV uses on-demand resources and bitcode. So Apple has three technologies called app thinning. One is app slicing, which you don't need on the Apple TV because it has its own binary. So that's built in. But on-demand resources, like I had a PS3 and I would go to update a game and it would say 4 gigabytes downloading. Please go have lunch and come back. And it was maddening.
Right.
So what this does is it downloads 200 megabytes immediately and that can be enough to get you going.
It's kind of like streaming a game.
Yeah. So that could be like the introductory video. It could be the first level. And then it starts downloading 2 gigabyte chunks and you can have up to 20 gigabytes and it'll just download them in stages. And when something's old, like you've watched a tutorial video, you don't need that taking up space anymore. So it'll just delete that and it'll download it again if you need it, but it doesn't take up your storage. So if your Apple TV is empty, it'll just keep a ton of stuff on it. As it starts to get filled, it'll keep the most recent and most frequently used stuff live and delete the stuff that is infrequently used or very old. So the bigger the device, the more cache space you have. So the more likely it is to have movies still in the cache, and the more likely it is to have more game levels and more game videos in cache. So it just means that you won't have to worry about downloading things as much.
And now as I look at it, on the website, it says available to ship 3 to 5 business days for both memory configurations. Go ahead, Danny.
How does that jive with Apple actually saying they've actually gone ahead and said that put an explainer on this website about the difference between 32 right. and 64, saying that if you intend to basically use it as a streaming box, you'll probably be okay with 32. If you intend to run a lot of apps, you'll probably be happier with 64. I don't recall them doing an explainer like that on the phones or the iPads or anything else.
Yeah, so the Apple TV is different. On the iPhone and iPad, they still let you – if you try to download a game and you run out of space, it'll say, please delete stuff and, you know, make space, and then you can download it. And they didn't want you to ever have to deal with that on a game console or in a TV box, because it's just like a box coming up and saying, oh, you're out of memory. We can't download this movie. We can't download this game. They just thought that would be a horrible experience. So on-demand resources is designed to sort of intelligently manage that. So if you have low bandwidth, for example, you'll want the 64, because if you just watch a movie and someone else in the family wants to watch it, it won't have the chances are it'll still be there in the cache and you can just watch it again. Or if you have a slow connection, or if you share your connection. So anything where cache is of value to you, the bigger one is going to be great. But if you're fine with an Apple TV now, the current Apple TV only has 8 gigabytes of storage and you can just stream everything.
Because there's no apps. I mean, it's just whatever. Yeah. Yeah.
There's a separate cache for movies and a separate cache for ads. So apps use on-demand resources. Movies and TV shows just use caching.
I noticed that they on the Apple site are starting to show some games, and they show this third-party controller. Apple's not making a game controller. Is that right?
Yeah, they have a made-for-iPhone program, and the SteelSeries Nimbus is the one that they were using in all the demos.
Is that the one to get, you think? I guess
yeah,
it would
I got
be.
Three of them, just thinking.
But on the other hand, this isn't going to be PS4 or Xbox One style gaming, or is it? I mean,
it's Wii-ish, I think, is the best analogy.
Yeah, because we're not talking a super fast processor.
I'm hoping
or
that things like you, because one of the problems with the way that the on-demand resources works is that people who make the traditional large style AAA title games, they worry they will not be able to fit things into Apple's app slicing model. So my hope, and I'm not a game developer, so this might be completely absurd, is that things like the Unreal Engine and Unity will start building that into the platform so that when the games are created, they will be sliced in a logical fashion for the developer.
Yeah, and that would be the great way to do that.
Yes.
You know, to be able to have something like that so that developers could write around the core, which will automatically be available on the machine. So you're downloading, you know, a 10 megabyte app instead of, or 20 or, you know, 30 instead of a gigabyte or two.
Or 20, like on the PlayStation.
Jim, are you going to be buying Guitar Hero $50 right out of the box? Is that the first
game?
No,
I can't play it.
Because you're a real guitar player.
Because I start to play the real chord, and it drives me crazy because I suck at guitar player.
Well, that should say everything anybody needs to know, frankly. You're not learning a skill that you're going to be able to translate into rock and roll heaven.
And then when you start playing and I start playing the real chords or something, or I try to, then the crowd boos me and I get mad and I squirt, you know.
You're gonna be the one that has to get that accessory strap for the remote control so he doesn't accidentally fly through the TV screen. Yeah.
What do you mean that's not how you play Sweet Child of Mine?
It is.
I have a picture. I've been with Slash.
I was standing next to Slash yesterday.
I just hope that Apple isn't going to impose their own definition of Apple TV on the developers and on the users. We talked before about how they've already said that they're not going to let productivity style apps get on board. There's been a whole lot. I've been talking to a bunch of developers who said that they've had a lot of their apps rejected already for a lot of the same reasons that early iPhone apps got rejected, where they're saying, well, that's not really a useful app. It doesn't really do anything new. It doesn't do this. And we don't think that your app is very good. Hopefully it'll follow the same road as the iPhone did, where they want to make sure that the first consumer experience with the Apple TV App Store is really, really positive, where every single app that they download is a killer game or something that really defines what the Apple TV is going to be about as an entertainment box. And then maybe a year from now, they'll start to loosen up the handcuffs because I'm a huge fan of this device. I mean, it's so disappointing they're not going to do iWork for it, because really there's so if they had
you said iWork for the Apple TV. Did I miss something?
No, I'm saying it's too bad they're not going to do iWork for the Apple TV. And it's too bad that there isn't any WebView technology built into it, because if they had a web browser and productivity app, something that is like an office suite, imagine like every school could then simply say, great, for $150 per seat, we can equip every single seat in this lab with an Apple TV. And if a developer could create something that could teach programming, it's such a capable device. When you look at the hardware that's inside it, when you look at the APIs that are built into this, what it can do, it really is an iOS computer. And we've already had it demonstrated that there's very little that iOS can't do. So it's not mind-boggling. It's very understandable why Apple's taking this position. But if they were to allow this to become everything that it could be, it would really set a lot of people back on their butts.
Has anybody heard about other music services or video services being allowed on Apple TV? I haven't, but Alexa, you know,
there's a bidding.
Well, we have a third party developer's already submitted a Twit app.
Well, there you go.
So I have heard of that.
But I mean,
is that what you mean, like, or would you mean like CBS?
I mean like Apple Music type of thing.
Spotify, you mean? Yeah,
Spotify.
Yeah, I wonder, because presumably Apple would not encourage that, right?
Well, because Apple Music is going to be part of this, but we all know the problems that Apple Music has.
Pandora is on the old Apple TV. Don't you think it'd be on the new one?
Well, that's it. I mean,
let's look at music and photos here. Let's see what they say. They'll probably say, and it supports Apple Music.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So there's two things. Like, the developers have to make it too, and Apple's not going to force them or pay them to make this stuff. So, and then once they make it, Apple has to approve it.
Well, that's the question: is Apple going to approve it?
They have on iOS. I would see no reason, and they would have such pressure on them if they didn't, that it doesn't make. But you know, to Andy's point, like there is WebKit does exist. You're basically running a special version of iOS, the same as a watch. They just made them private, so developers can't access.
Let's talk about that, because what I'd heard as Andy is that you can't just as often happens on iOS frame a web page on there using.
Yeah, that's intense. So I think that the idea there was they wanted people to make native apps and not just make a UI or a WK web view or a Safari view controller and stick your website inside it.
Right.
That's which cheesy. Some people might have done to be there on day one. So this, and who knows what the future is going to hold, but also loading WebKit is a very large framework. And there's this theory, and Don Melton went into it on one of his shows, and it was a really good explanation, that there are some devices that are primary and web-first devices, and there are some devices that are secondary and not web-first. They don't need the web to drive them, like the watch, where it doesn't make as much sense to have all that stuff, and you really do benefit from the native experience. And it sort of is a gentle nudge towards, you know, don't just make a web gateway and then try to load a bunch of content each time, but really make a good native experience. Like, they don't have Bluetooth keyboard support on this Apple TV either. It was on the last one, but it's not on this one. It's really designed not to be a computer.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, when you look at a true entertainment device, and that's what they're going for here, you know, like a console, but with some extra things. So for light gaming, for entertainment purposes, for music, for videos, for all of this stuff, and then you add in the new remote and Siri and, you know, all the things that you can do with that, it's a very compelling device. I'm looking forward to it myself.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't look forward to pretty much anything that has Apple Music on it, but, you know.
Still bitter. Let me ask Renee. Let me ask Renee about the Steel Series. Do I have to order it from Apple? Is the made for Apple version the same as the regular one? I'm looking at it on Amazon for $64.
I think they're all MFI compliant. I would double
MFI?
Check this to make sure, but MFI is a certification program
that
just means
MFI.
That it's been tested and actually and works with it. And it means
it's made for iPod. Is that?
Yeah, there's only as far as I can tell, there's only one MFI program. So if it's MFI certified, it works.
Okay.
And that was when we tried the demo, and they worked really well.
Mm. All right. So I guess,
but just on the keyboard thing, there's like, if you,
how much was the how much was the Steel Series on Apple Store? Was it $65 thereabouts?
Something like that. Yeah, there wasn't a huge disparity.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah, they had that, like, for the keyboard thing. I missed it because I used it, but apparently the percentage of people who used it was low single digit, and it's mostly developers. So it's one of those things where I hope they add it back in, but it's one of those. Yeah. But in terms of shipping, I understand why it didn't make it in the first cut.
Yeah, I hope it's coming in a next generation. I mean, this is where I do a lot of my messing around with hardware. So of course I got a whole bunch of Raspberry Pis and stuff here. and one of the reasons why this is such a great device is that the developers basically said, all we're going to give you is a box of potential, and you can put whatever you want on it. You can build whatever you want on it. We're not going to artificially limit what can be done with this. And so if you want to use it as an educational PC that runs something like Office in a web browser, great. Go ahead, compile that app and go ahead and release it. If you want to do it as a core for a robot, go ahead and do it. Pretty much everything you want to do, go ahead and do it. There's even a box. It runs Plex. You can basically put into a nice case and basically use this as an Apple TV if you want to, and it'll hook up to whatever Plex server you already got. You've already got connected to, work with the keyboard, work with all that other sort of stuff. So all I'm getting at is that it's just too bad that sometimes the company that creates something is incapable of finding the awesome inside it, and the only people who can do that are a million different, totally insane people who want to do that one thing that nobody's ever thought of that's maybe applicable to 12 people, but then they do it so well that it totally redefines the thing. And again, they found the awesome that wasn't to be found anywhere inside Cupertino. So when they do things like saying we're arbitrarily, if they were to decide not just simply as something we haven't gotten to, but as something that we think is wrong for the product, we're not going to make this work with a keyboard, that kind of disappoints me. And when they say that we're going to limit the sorts of apps you can release for this, that kind of disappoints me. But as we've seen with other devices, let's wait a year to see where they are in app approvals in a year from now.
Andy, don't you find that Apple over the years has done this quite successfully in other product lines where they say, you know, we've kind of laid out how we want this to look and how we want it to act, functionality, form, everything. And we want everything to work like this. And that's fine, because then they open it up a bit later and say, okay, now you can start doing other things. But it seems like they're trying to redefine what Apple TV is. And until that definition is in people's minds, they're kind of, you know, hauling developers in to say, no, you can't do this, you can't do this. But yeah, you can do that because it's an entertainment device. You know, I think, it seems like to me.
Well, and even in their description
It's another difference in philosophy. And that's been such a positive thing for consumers. The fact that Apple keeps so much control over their hardware that they pretty much basically give the consumer every chance to have the most positive experience possible. The flip side of that is just that, for instance, I don't think that I have not had it convinced to me by anybody inside or outside of Apple why iOS lacked even what we would call basic keyboard support, just the ability to do app switching from the keyboard, just the ability to let developers make it easier for developers to put in command equivalents for stuff like that. And more and more people are using there's such a great library of productivity apps available for iOS that's kind of held it back for years and years and years. So that's just an example of, if Apple simply said, well, what if we just simply let people do what they're going to do? People who are going to be confused by this will never see this. But the people who want to take advantage of having a keyboard attached to the Apple TV will say, well, what happens if I try to pair this keyboard? Hey, that's great. That means every time I have to type in a password or an account name, I don't have to do it one up arrow at a time and this sort of stuff. So it's a difference. It's a difference of philosophy. There are definitely upsides to consumers each way. And Apple certainly has had no shortage of success pursuing their philosophy.
It does seem, though, that they are a little confused about what this is supposed to do, given the description on the store about, well, you should get 32 gigs if you're going to use this as a streaming device, and 64 gigs if you think you're going to be using a lot of apps. It sounds like they're even a little schizophrenic about what this might end up being.
There's only two sizes. I don't think so.
Well, that's true.
I mean, when you look at what they're laying out for this, you know, they've already said that the future of television for them is apps. So, if if you plan on getting a new Apple TV and watching movies mostly, mm-hmm. and, you know, downloading the odd app, then yeah, get a 32 gig. But if you're going to play some games and, you know, you're going to buy stuff and, you know, you're going to do all this other stuff, then yeah, the 64. But I think what's most compelling about Apple TV and the way that Apple has described it is the interactivity with channels like MLB. You know, they're going to bring that to the NHL app, they said, at the first of 2016. I'm really looking forward to that. I can't tell you how much I'm looking forward to that. Because, you know, I'm a big hockey fan. Being Canadian, you know, we skate around everywhere we go, even sometimes down to the store. You know? So I want to be able to watch hockey in an interactive way like that. I'd love to be able to watch football, college, and NFL and all that in that same type of interactive way. And I think that's what Apple is laying out for us right now. And I think that's why they don't want this message diluted with keyboard support and, you know, all the other things, productivity and all the stuff that we're talking about right now, because they want this to be the first step in the future of actual TV.
Does it worry you a little bit that Apple is competing with Roku and they're competing with Chromecast and they're competing with other boxes, that if someone is going to a quick sidebar example, I needed a replacement for my electric shaver. I'm not an electric shaver aficionado, and I'm not an electric shaver design wonk. So I basically went to the smarthome.com, whatever they recommended, that's what I bought. I bought it. I'm very happy with it. And sometimes I think about what it's like when you're not like us. Like, I just want to, I want a box to plug into my upstairs bedroom, my bedroom TV that will get me Netflix, will get me Hulu, that will get me MLB, that will get me these sports packages. And I see, oh, well, there are four of them that do that. Great. Here's the Roku, cost $99. Great. Let's do that. I'm just hoping that Apple differentiates themselves, saying we're not just another box that gives you Netflix.
I don't think that's going to be an issue at this point, because Apple's brand is so strong, because people are going to look at, you know, okay, there's all these names that maybe I have heard of, maybe I haven't, but then there's Apple. Okay, let's just go with the Apple one. You know, it's going to do everything that I need it to do and probably then some. And it's going to be, I'm going to have my music on it, and, you know, because it syncs with all my devices, and it's going to have this other stuff. Yeah, let's just go with Apple and be done with it. I think a lot of people will do that because of the reputation of Apple. And I don't see any downside to what Apple's doing right now, because they control so much of the ecosystem. So I can't see that being an issue.
Okay.
We'll find out. As they say in local news, only time will tell. We're going to take a break, come back with more. Jim Dalrymple is here from loopinsight.com, The Loop. Also, Mr. Rene Ritchie from imore.com. He's in the Bay Area, but he didn't come up here.
I tried, Leo.
You broke my heart.
I know, I tried.
Also, Mr. Andy Yannico from the Chicago Sun Times.
In honor of the two Canadians, I'll give you the Queen's wave.
I think it's more like, it's the screwing in, I'm screwing in a light bulb kind
of thing. Yes, the screwing the light bulb wave.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know, for what it's worth, I also don't know anything about electric razors, Andy, so.
Oh, somebody's doing your sides. Our show today brought to you by Drobo. Great to have them back. Yeah, I don't even have to say, if you're a Mac user, you know the name Drobo. Mac or Windows or any kind of PC, Drobo is a safe, simple, expandable solution for all your storage needs. Maybe you saw the last few weeks I've been playing, I set up the new Drobo Mini, which I just love. This is the smallest, most compact 4-drive enclosure I've ever used. Has Thunderbolt on it. It has USB 3 on it. And I one of the great things about Drobos are it's unlike a lot of other massive storage solutions, hard drive agnostic. This will hold laptop sized drives. I put a couple of 2 terabyte drives, a 500 gig drive. You know, whatever you have lying around, you can put SSDs in it. The Mini is just over 2 pounds, 4 2.5-inch drive bays. That means you could get as big as 8 terabytes. 8 terabytes in that little enclosure, small enough for me to take with me. I think a lot of videographers and others will be using these, especially if you need speed, you put the SSDs in. But it also has, and I love this, a slot for a mSATA caching drive. So I put a little 850 EVO Samsung mSATA drive in there. I think it was a 256 gig, 128, can't remember. And the acceleration bay will really speed up small file reads. So if you're using Lightroom or Apple Photos, that's what I mean by small file reads, where you're going, the caching is incredible. Incredible. How about the 5D? It also has an optional mSATA SSD acceleration bay. It has space for 5 3.5-inch drives. That means you can go to a whopping 64 terabytes. These new accelerated drives, I think this is such a brilliant idea. The Drobo was originally developed, as you probably know, for photographers, the pros. But working with video, you put those SSDs in there, you're going to, especially with Thunderbolt, man, this thing is blazingly fast. Also great if you want to set up your own network media or file server. You just want a big bucket of storage to back up your files. I mean, the ultimate backup drive. Of course, as soon as I plug it in, Time Machine says, you want me to use this? Super reliable, too, because the Drobo, as you know, I feel like everybody knows this, but maybe I should show you. The Drobo will let you know if your capacity starts to, you know, you get filled up, so you can swap in a bigger drive. And these drives do not have to match. It'll also tell you if any drive is failing, and you can hot swap it out with a new drive. It'll rebuild, and you'll be ready to go. I mean, literally, it took me about 30 seconds to add a third drive to my four drive bay. Because you can use it with as few as two drives, so it's nice. You can expand it as you go. And Drobos have an eternal eUSB device where data is copied if there's a power failure. So you don't have to worry about long data outages. Add or replace with ease. No tools required. They just pop in. The front, it's little things. Like the front is attached by magnets. You don't need a tool to open it up and put in a new drive or add a drive. It's just you flop it right off. The lights tell you everything you need to know. Thunderbolt, gigabit, and USB 3.0 connections. My Mini has USB 3 and a Thunderbolt. Some of the other Drobos have, that's the Mini. I love this Mini. Visit drobo.com/twit to learn more and check out their complete line of products. And when you use our code TWIT100, wait a minute. Whoa. You get $100 off? I didn't know they were going to do that much. That's awesome. $100 off on a Drobo Mini, a Drobo 4-Bay, or the Drobo 5N. Huh. Now, how much would you pay? That's drobo.com/twit. Use the code TWIT100 to save $100. Everybody should have a Drobo Mini. TWIT100 is the offer code at drobo.com, drobo.com/twit. I think somewhere I actually have an old Drobo jingle that...
Leo, can I add something there?
Yes, I bet you know about the Drobo.
Drobo is also very good for audio because I had a Drobo, you know, years ago when they first came out. Sadly, I don't anymore, but I used it for audio, for music creation, Pro Tools and things like that, because songs, when you're creating and building the songs, they go up to, you know, gigabytes of data in the songs, you know, recording
Would
audio.
Would you like, and I want like to that. Try one of these minis, Jim, because I bet you I can get you one. I'm sure Mark will give you. We'll send you one if you want.
I think they're great products.
Love
so
them.
I just
Love
wanted
them.
To throw in there audio, you know,
audio, video, anything you're doing.
Great stuff.
Yeah, because real time is important. You know, you can't wait while the drives catch up.
I mean, and that's the importance of SSD. And you know, you were talking about the hot swappable. I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
I cannot when I'm in the middle of a project and recording audio and. You know, if I'm recording a live drummer and I've got people coming over, I need, you know, fast and hot swappable. And like you said, on the front panel, tells you everything you need to know. That's what we need in audio.
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought I'd throw that in.
Free plug for Drobo.
It might work nicely with Plex if that gets on the Apple TV this
week.
Oh,
yeah. Does the Apple TV has a USB port, but you can't just put additional storage on there.
No, so the USB-C port there is for diagnostics if you ever have to troubleshoot it, or for developers if they want to test their apps on the device.
Yeah, too bad. That's one
and
nice thing.
I was going to say the lightning cable is to charge the Apple TV, the Siri remote.
Right. It's one nice thing on like the Xbox One. They really did this nice. You can go out and you can use your Drobo, in fact, and you want to add 4 terabytes of storage, 64 terabytes of storage to your Xbox One, it's easy. You just plug it in on the USB port. This is the problem I think Apple faces a little bit, is they're playing catch up in some regards, depending on what you're looking for. If gaming is number one, then you'd get an Xbox and have some TV capabilities, although it doesn't yet have a lot of the TV capabilities you'd like to see, but it has Netflix and Amazon and stuff like that. The only real advantage Apple has brings to the table is it's the only way you can watch iTunes and the only way you can AirPlay.
I think what we have to remember here with the Apple TV, as we're talking about other services, other things that we can do, is that Apple is going for the consumer.
Yeah.
You know, they're not necessarily going for the high-end person that wants to, you know, that has a Mac Mini server and Plex and all that kind of stuff. They're going for the average person that wants to turn it on, watch a movie, and turn it off again, you know, maybe fire up Netflix or something like that. That's who they are. And there's a gazillion people like that out there.
Indeed, there are, as Apple has proven. Mm. A gazillion and one.
One with a hat.
I don't know if you mean you or me. We both are wearing the hat. I can't wait to get mine. I have one TV that doesn't have an Apple TV on it, and it's gonna get the new one. Mostly, I'm interested in the remote and Siri and searching and being able to use the scroll to scrub and things like that. Those will be really nice features, I think.
Yeah. It's fab because using a TV is so different from using any other kind of computer. It's like Google had search on Google TV and it works very, very well. But when I reviewed it a couple of years ago, it works great, but that's not how I watch TV.
Right.
So Apple is usually so good at figuring out how people interact with their technology. I'm really looking forward to getting like day-to-day playtime to see if they figured out how I watch TV. And I don't mean just, you know, in my underpants on the sofa.
That's what I mean. Day-to-day playtime. I'm going to be watching some TV over
it's
the
so
next
smart,
few
though.
Days.
It's like you say, what did I miss? And it goes back 15 or 30 seconds and puts subtitles up at the same time. So you don't
that's
miss it
the
again.
Old man feature that I really need. What did he say? You say, what did he say?
What did he say? What did she say? But also, because you're talking, you then miss the next part, so it keeps playing. I mean, it's just really, really well thought out.
Yeah, as soon as I heard about that, I was thinking about the time where I watched Shallow Hal with my mom. And I wanted that mom. No, mom, she isn't really changing into a thin
exactly.
person.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going
to
stop again.
Why is she in the elevator talking to Tony? Who is that
is
tall?
Is that David Niven? No, mom. David Niven died 12 years before this was made.
It's so smart. Like, show me every episode of, Modern Family with Scott Bakula as the guest star, and then it goes through and finds all those for you.
Well,
nice.
We think it's smart. Well, have you played with the developer edition?
Well, so the developer edition, and a news publication, shall remain nameless, did a review yesterday of the developer build, and Siri is not fully turned on, and they complained about bugs in Siri. It's not on, so you can't, anyway, it makes me so mad. But yeah, at the event, and by the time it's released later in this week, Siri at the event worked fabulously. I tried all sorts of crazy things.
Okay, so you did get
really
to
well.
Gardner in our chat room has a developer edition. He's wondering, will those upgrade to 1.0 when the TV comes out? Do we know?
First, I mean, they haven't said anything, but usually they're pretty good about it.
Yeah.
I can imagine. There's so much that can still be done. What I like about the Fire TV and about the Amazon TV on the Fire devices is just the ability to basically do embedded it'll build an automatic commentary track into the sidebar if you want. As every actor comes in and comes out, it will show you here's the actor's name. Tap them to get more information about this person. If there's a piece of music being played, here's a piece of music that's being played. And of course, you can turn that off when you don't want the distraction. But if you want, it's like watching 1776 and reminding myself, no, that is not Phil Hartman. Phil Hartman would have been about 12 years old when this was shot, but it will show you, no, this is not Phil Hartman. So I'm hoping that Apple TV brings some of that sauce to viewing.
Mutual friend Dave Wiskus was saying he wants an app where you all agree to watch the same show or movie at the same time, and then it lets you sort of enjoy that as if you were sitting in the same room.
Mm. Keeps all synced up even if one person pauses. Yeah. Boy, if they had a way to even do like just automatically syncing a commentary track, if they had like an XML markup schema for here is how to mark up a piece of audio so that it will automatically sync up to something that's playing that we've got inside the Apple Store. Boy, that would be a fun thing.
Well, there were two things that a lot of the – I don't think Apple mentioned this, but when you actually go on the page, you see that it supports 7.1 audio now, which is up from 5.1 in the last box, and 1080p up to 60 frames per second, which is nice as well.
So even though you don't have 4K, since most people don't have 4K TVs and the 4K content is still lagging, that sounds pretty good. It's going to work for me anyway.
Yeah, and 7.1 is nice.
Oh, that's too small, isn't it? Don't ever, you know, any extra over the cliff. Where do you go? Nowhere. We go
4
to
TVs.
7. This one goes to 7.
Although, and I guess I don't want to be that guy, but I guess I will be. I should point out that there are plenty of streamers that do 4.1, and there are other formats like Dolby Atmos and so forth, and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, we're getting there. I mean, there's going to be – it's interesting because, like Leo, every time we go to CES, we hear about the 4K stuff and the 4K Blu-rays are coming. And, oh, now they're not here yet, but next time they're going to come and they're going to have HDR with them. And it's just such a nebulous time period.
Yeah, but I think we are rapidly entering that time period. Yes. I think those Blu-ray DVD players are coming out this month or next. And I think what's also happening is 4K is getting traction very, very rapidly because almost every TV you buy now is 4K.
But I'm waiting for the good ones. Yeah, I want to wait till I get a 4K TV that looks like Dolby Vision.
I am with you. I want HDR.
Yeah.
And
that'll be a much bigger deal than the 4K. Because unless you're getting a giant-sized TV, you're not going to appreciate the detail of the 4K. But even if you're getting a smaller TV and you get HDR with it, you're going to appreciate all the extra detail you see in it.
Right. I agree. This is the 14th anniversary of an Apple product release that changed the world. Although, and I'm so glad that Mac Rumors has kept this thread up. In October 23rd, 2001, Apple introduced the iPod. And if I were some of these people, I might be a little, I might be running and hiding my head, if not changing my handle. So this is the thread, and it's still up on Mac Rumors. Apple's new thing, iPod. And, well, it starts with Elite Macker saying, I poop, I cry. I was so hoping for something more. Weezer X80 who says, no, great. Just what the world needs, another freaking MP3 player. Go, Steve. Where's the Newton? What? Here's my favorite from Pants. Sounds very revolutionary to me, sardonic pumpkin face. Hey, here's an idea, Apple. Rather than entering the world of gimmicks and toys, why don't you spend a little more time sorting out your pathetically expensive and crap server lineup?
Okay, he has a point there. 2001, he had a point.
Or are you really aiming to become a glorified consumer gimmicks firm?
Yes.
Yes, as a matter of fact.
They're really, really successful consumer gimmicks firm. I'd like to be a shareholder in their consumer gimmicks firm.
I want something new. I want them to think differently. Why, oh, why would they do this? It's so wrong, so stupid.
Meanwhile, Jim was there live blogging it.
Jim, were you there live blogging this?
I was there.
Yeah. Gee, an MP3 player with an HD, how original. Kind of reminds me of a jukebox I once knew.
All Jim heard was 10,000 AC/DC songs in his pocket.
Yeah, $400.
Well, no, at that time, it was 1,000.
Yeah, 1,000 songs in your pocket. It was a 5-gig hard drive. What was your reaction, Jim, when you first... I have mine too. In fact, I powered it up over the weekend, and I still have my music on it.
I powered it up, but I got the sad folder, unfortunately.
Oh.
We won't know what Andy was listening to in 2002, 2003.
I was listening pretty much the same thing I'm listening to now, which is kind of sad.
Yeah.
So you're sitting there, Jim. Did you have – was the rumor mill strong? We had to Think Secret and things like that back then.
I'll admit I was a bit shocked too. Uh-huh. I don't know. It was just kind of a weird thing because we recognize now that it was the start of something pretty
amazing,
revolutionary for Apple.
Yeah.
But at that time you were thinking, huh? You know, but they did have some, 1,000 songs where even MP3 players at that time from Creative would basically hold a CD. you know. So it was different. It was different.
You weren't sold when they're right out of the box.
They're huge. I mean, they're the size of a Discman.
Yeah.
Once you get your hands on them, and you know, put the songs on there and started using it, then you could say, oh, okay, I kind of get this now. But you know, we had no idea where Steve was taking Apple at that time, and you know, if we knew that there was going to be a music store and videos and all of this stuff, then you know, everything would have made more sense. But he kind of laid it out for us bit by bit over the next few years.
Somebody recently made the point, which I think is quite interesting, that Apple pioneered the, you know, there's this thinking among startups that you should do the minimal viable product, in software, and then let it out into the world and let people play with it and then see where it's going to go. And somebody pointed out, you know, in some ways that's what Apple did with the iPhone, and you might even say that with the original iPod. This was the minimal viable product. Now let's see what happens so we can iterate on this. FireWire, it is fairly big and heavy compared to something like the iPod. It wasn't the Nano. It was the littler
the Mini.
The Mini was the one that really took off, right?
Although I think some people would argue that they make the minimal delightful product or the minimal attractive product because right. they don't skimp on they pick their targets well. It's not like it's the worst in everything that they could possibly put out. It's like we think this and this and this will be super attractive and it'll be enough. Like the iPhone, it didn't do a lot of things that other smartphones did, but the interface was so compelling that people wanted it anyway.
That's really a good point. It's not something you don't want.
Yeah, and there's so many things about this that are just so classic Apple.
Right.
Like, this is a music player. It is a music player. And how many music players have you ever seen where the most prominent button is not the play pause button? It is. You have to look all the way down
That's
here and
point.
See this tiny little silkscreen thing.
I couldn't find it at first, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You have to take, it's a tiny little silkscreen thing. And the word iPod, you have to explain what it means because it's not iPlayer or iMusic or anything right. like that. And
That's
it still
a good
has
point. A, it's a pod. What is that?
And there's a story of one of the classic Steve Jobs stories about how, I mean, this is like a crash product. They were just buying, they were taking a lot of stuff that was off the shelf and combining them to get this out the door as quickly as they could with the level of quality that they wanted. And so they showed the story that goes that they showed Steve one of the last like working prototypes, or whatever. And they show, okay, here's how this works and here's how the click wheel works. And Scott, and they stop. Why is the screen green? And it was the LCD that had – it was a stock like LCD, right. like green backlit screen that was on everything. They said, well, that's the – we can get these in quantity. This is how we can get the price point down. I said, no, look at this. It's white. It's chrome. We are not putting a green backlit screen on this. This has to be black and white.
Yeah.
And so they had to go all the way back and source new screens, I heard, at a time where they had no time or money to waste just because this had to look and feel right because – it's like you say, it's in like Renee says, it's not necessarily having a feature complete product at 1.0. It's about getting someone to fall in love with it so much that they're kind of overlooking that it doesn't have as many features as something else. And when they finally do roll out 2.0 in a year or two, that customer is eager to replace 1.0 with 2.0.
Yeah. Mine does light up, as you can see. And
nice.
you have to, by the way, there's AC/DC. It looks like I have High Voltage. One song, It's a Long Way, and Money Talks. That's it. I'm sorry, Jim. But I also have the Beatles on here, and I don't know how I got the Beatles on here. That's bizarre. You have to put this in context. This is 2001. Mm-hmm. Cell phones were flip phones. This was, I think, design-wise, it was pretty striking. But the other context, of course, is the state of the art in MP3 players at the time was awful. We were all very excited about MP3s and the idea of having a hard drive, the Nomad. And I have actually, well, it's also in my, I don't want to keep sending the staff running to my my closet here, but I have one of the original car player MP3s. And these things, you know, you put the hard drive in the trunk.
Yeah.
So this is a hard drive based MP3 player you're holding the palm of your hand. I think that felt pretty revolutionary at the time.
Toshiba 1.5, right?
Yeah, I think it was those Toshiba little matchbook-sized hard drives. In fact, that's why they stopped. Isn't that why they stopped making the Classic? Is because they could no longer source the hard drives. Mm. So times have left this an amazing device behind. But boy, for the time, it was pretty incredible. I did not go to the event. I was working on the site at MSNBC, I think. Or maybe it was at Tech TV at the time. I remember Jim Lauterbach coming back with one of these and saying, look, wow, that's cool. That's cool. We had played with a lot of MP3 players, and the UI was uniformly horrible. Now you look at this now, and it's like obvious. Well, that's what an MP3 player looks like. But at the time, this was so much ahead of what anybody else had done.
It was also so smart. Like, I remember when I was doing product marketing, they would always point to 1,000 songs in your pocket. It's one of the best ways of explaining a complicated product to every person in the world. Like, you just understood what that meant.
Right.
That was brilliant.
Yeah. And of course, it was $500. I mean, when they got the, by the time they got the Mini out, it was smaller, lighter, cheaper. You know, it was half as expensive. And then there was no question. This is a brilliant product.
And they were willing to put out the Mini, even though this was a great. I mean, that's one of the things that I've always liked about Apple, is that they're good willing point. To cannibalize themselves.
Yes, really good point. I'm pleased that mine still works. I'm sorry yours doesn't, Andy.
No, but actually, I know something common to both of ours. Like, can you imagine an Apple device that they would delay this another 5 years? If to make sure that the screen does not look all scratched up, like
the back, look at the back,
is all like engraved and scratched up.
Yeah,
it makes you think about how much engineering at Apple goes into just making sure they're choosing a surface that will continue to look good 2 or 3 years later.
Well, and those were hard learned lessons, for frankly. A while too. They hadn't made devices that people put in their pockets with their keys until now.
I was just saying, my original iPod touches, they all had a very similar back, and they're all like very Indiana Jones now at this point too.
Yeah. Pretty cool stuff. It's a nice memory. And thank you, Mac Rumors, for keeping that thread up so we can embarrass a few people. To their credit, said, "No, what are you talking about? That's a hard drive in there. That thing is amazing."
I would like to see a post where somebody said, "I'm going to buy Apple stock right now because this is going to be huge."
Yeah.
He's the guy that's in the Riviera right now,
earning 20%.
What would it be worth if you'd bought a share of Apple stock in 2001 when the iPod came out?
I try not to do that math.
I know.
I still remember 12 3/8. That was what Apple stock was at when I was urging all of my friends, buy Apple stock. I can't buy it myself, but I'm telling you, it's going to turn around big.
Yeah.
I don't do that bad. I had money that I could have spent. I try not to.
You wouldn't need
that
this whole journalism gig, Andy.
This whole journalism thing. So we have some new releases. We have a watch, OS 2.01, and we have iOS 9.1. Is it all about the emojis?
Can you imagine, like, if you ever want to make an instant adoption curve for your new OS, all you have to do is put in a significant amount of new emojis.
Middle finger emoji. That's all you have to do, baby.
Taco Leo. The taco. I mean, that's pretty cute.
Burrito. But no poutine, right?
No, I'm filing a radar. I want you to be able to hold down the French fries, and it'll pop up and give you poutine, tater tots, maybe hash browns. And then I think that would be just finish it off.
Apple, do you know how many Canadians would just adore you if you just did that?
Yeah. I wouldn't.
Oh, not a poutine fan?
Jim does not acknowledge poutine. Quebec is in Canada, unfortunately.
Oh, I get it. So, Jim, you're an Anglophone.
Yes.
Yes. Not one of them. Not one of them Frenchies.
When we have a metal fest, he begrudgingly comes to the province, but otherwise it doesn't.
But I presume 9.1 fixed other things, security and bugs.
A lot of security fixes, too.
Yeah.
And there were some Apple Music fixes. And on the watch, one thing I noticed on the watch is that the calorie counting thing in fitness is more accurate now.
Ah.
So they did do some different things. And that's even better from 2.0.
We should point out that Apple, some people are kind of blaming Apple for the middle finger emoji. This is Apple just extending the emoji set to match what the Unicode consortium has determined the emoji
should
be.
They did every one of them. They made sure, I think maybe because they were including the middle finger one, they made sure that they included everything in the set so they can just say this is the set as per Unicode.
Yeah.
We did not pick or choose.
Although Megan Maroney, our host at iOS Today and of Tech News Tonight, pointed out she has middle school kids, all of whom have iPads from the school. And she said, this is not a good combination.
I think the Unicode Consortium is going to be in a lot of trouble.
But you think that they don't know?
Who doesn't know?
The kids.
No, they know. They learned immediately. Are you kidding?
Of course they do.
So there's a lot of middle fingers going on.
I don't want to say what the kids are using some of those emoji for.
She wanted to protect them. I don't say she wanted to protect them. I'm just saying that she wishes that they weren't, because now she's getting a lot of texts with middle fingers and burritos.
But that's what I'm saying, Leo. The kids use fruit emoji for outlandish things, so we don't really need to give them actual.
Nothing you can do about it.
Might I also point out that when we were kids, dictionaries had the word butt in them. We looked up the word butt. And we turned out, well... Okay.
I just sent middle finger poop.
Middle finger poop. That's all you need to do.
Says
everything. The watch got the emoji as well, so they're both compatible now.
I am very disappointed. I am going to stop using Windows now because I've gone to Emojipedia to see the new Unicode 8.0, 41 new emoji characters, and Windows doesn't have them.
It's a tragedy.
This is horrible. I'm getting square boxes instead of tacos, burritos, popcorn, hot dogs.
Well, of course they don't. They'll have it in another 3 years. They consider it to be cool.
Come on, Microsoft.
I'm here with your great grandfather. He basically died when he was 18. When he was 18 years old, because he had no vaccinations. Please tell him how you suffer by not having emojis. Go ahead. This will all be.
I can't
on YouTube.
Show you because I don't have the crying face emoji, Andy. and we should point out, as we went to start the show, iOS 9.2 came out in beta.
No, really? Already? Yep. But that's in beta. That doesn't mean I'm going to get it pushed out anytime soon. Well, that makes sense. They're always working. They're always beta testing the next one. Isn't that the case?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And this is Edge. This is their new browser and everything.
How are the plugins?
None. As you know. So don't pretend you didn't.
Okay, Firefox and Chrome work fine on Windows.
Yeah, they do. Not as well, though. Actually, Edge, smoother scrolling and some other things. Siri's refusing. Is this true? Siri's refusing to answer certain questions if you're not an Apple Music subscriber.
They built a lot of extra Siri features in for Apple Music, and what it probably means is that they built that in specifically and didn't think about extending it to the rest of it, or didn't have time to extend it into the full stack yet, and hopefully that's something that will get.
I can't believe that.
I refuse to answer some questions too.
let me try this here. Hey Siri. She never listens to me. What's the most popular song in the U.S.
I'm not sure I understand.
Oh, yeah, because I didn't finish the sentence. What's the most popular song in the U.S. today?
Sorry, Leo. I can't look up the music charts for you. You don't seem to be subscribed to Apple Music.
Screw you, Siri.
Yeah, no, when Apple Music launched, they show you that they built a bunch of commands specifically for Apple Music, and all of those only work for Apple Music currently.
Yeah. They probably don't even have... Well, does she have the information? Probably not.
Well, it's hitting the Apple Music servers for those questions.
Right, so, okay, I can't really blame her. And I never would really ask that question, so...
Well, it would be nice if they found out if you don't have Apple Music, instead of giving you an error, they just shunted you off to Wikipedia or the web,
yeah,
the web search
maybe.
Or something.
Be a little bit
well,
more.
Well, it would be nice if they just answered it. I mean, you know, it doesn't. You're not asking it, hey Siri, am I a subscriber to Apple Music? You're not asking it that. You're asking Siri, who can go anywhere in the little interwebs and find out answers to any question you have. What is the top song?
Oh, so what it should do, Jim, is say, here is the top song. Would you like me to play it for you by subscribing to Apple
I'm
Music?
I'm so sorry. There you go.
Anything. At the very least, just say, answer the stupid question.
Say that the top song on Apple Music today is, even if you're not a subscriber, maybe that will get you interested in Apple Music.
Yeah.
You're right.
But it's a server-side service, so Apple can update it anytime.
The top song on Apple Music today is this. We would play it for you. But you're a moron and you don't subscribe to it, or you're very smart and don't subscribe to it, whatever it is. At least give you the answer. Come on.
Come on, Siri. Come on.
Are you use a little bit of salesmanship saying, you know, it's maybe a little bit too hip for you. Only some of our Apple Music subscribers are really into that kind of really young, vivacious. How about some Paul Anka?
Oh, that would be burn.
See, then I'd throw my phone down on the ground.
Hey, Cortana.
Did you buy a new
phone? What's the number one song in the U.S. today? Let's see if Cortana will know. Thinking. All right. Well, it's playing. No, who's playing the Beatles?
That was me. Sorry about that.
I can't reach Bing.com right now.
I wanted to double check to make sure that it could that if you'd asked it a simple question about your own music library, it would still deliver for you. All right, come on.
So
you're just being jerks.
Cortana did the thing you'd want Siri to do, which it pushed me to Billboard and, you know, number one song, BobBorst.com, the number one song in the U.S., that kind of thing. It gave me a search.
There's a lot that needs to be fixed.
Better, it took a long time to do it, by the way.
Yeah, at least Siri comes back right away and says, screw off.
I think you know the reason why I'm not answering that question.
Steve Ballmer says, saving Apple was the craziest thing Microsoft ever did.
They didn't save
Apple. I know, that's kind of a mean thing to say.
Gosh.
Golly. Not only was it crazy, you didn't do it. Well, wait a minute, though. They did offer $150 million when Apple was kind of in the financial dumper, right?
Yeah, but they did that because Apple was going to sue them for stealing QuickTime.
Oh.
Yeah, there were a bunch of things. They settled a bunch of lawsuits that were doing neither company any good whatsoever. But the most important thing that Microsoft did was basically commit to continuing to support Microsoft Office for Mac, which was a no-brainer for them because they don't have the vision to think about, here's how we can – they weren't in a position to want to have any paper trail about them wanting to destroy a competitor because they were being hit with antitrust. And also, Microsoft Office for Mac was making them a fortune at the time. So it did help Apple a lot because if a lot of people were thinking that, well, gee, the only reason why Macs are viable in my office today is the fact that there's a version of Office for it. If Microsoft ever decided that Apple was a losing proposition, that there goes that reason. So they helped out Apple, but no, they didn't save Apple.
It was cheap. It was a cheap $150 million check, and Ballmer's completely wrong. I think you're right. It provided them with cover with the DOJ. Office was going to make that money back right away. All they had to do was commit to making Office for the Apple for what? How many more years?
4 years. Bill Gates' giant head up on stage.
And they got Bill Gates' giant head up on the stage. That's a win all around. I think Ballmer's nuts.
And keep in mind that wasn't like a settlement. That was an investment. That was stock.
Right.
It was non-voting stock or something like that.
Right.
But they got that money back plus. So.
Siri. Oh, let's see. We did that one. Let me see. I had another Siri story here.
The driving?
Yeah. Siri is more distracting than Google when it comes to
driving. My friends and family are more distracting.
That's a stupid story. I give up. I'm not going to do that one.
And if you have nothing in the car with you, you fall asleep or get bored and start. I mean, like, that's
huge.
You can't win.
I know. Oh, I know what I wanted to talk about. Let's take a break and we'll talk about the Department of Justice and Apple and encryption. Oh, is it? All right. Is there something in this study besides just this silly
besides Siri, it's interesting in that very, very long study about the effects of hands-free systems start to finish, not just Siri versus Google, also like the in-car entertainment system. And it demonstrated an interesting thing that if you think that, for instance, I'm only going to use hands-free and I'm only going to do it at a stoplight, for instance, they show that, well, unfortunately, it takes the brain about a certain amount of time to shift back into driving mode, even if you are using a successful system to engage that. So you are impaired to your mental load is still compromised for a good like 10 to 20 to 30 seconds after that. They also demonstrated that things that are difficult get a little bit easier, but they never stop getting difficult. So it's not as though after a month with hands-free devices, it's going to be as easy as like not being impaired at all. And the third interesting thing is that older people are, no matter how sharp they are, no matter how tech-savvy they are, no matter how clever they are, they all seem to find these systems more difficult to use than younger people, which is a interesting statistic given that the majority of new cars in private hands, according to a study from 2013, are being bought by older people from like 60 to I think the age group is 50 to 65, maybe 55 to 65.
Yeah, millennials don't
so
buy cars.
There's a lot of interesting there's a lot of interesting data. I wrote about this for cars.com last week and was talking to some of the researchers not the researchers who were involved in it, but some of the people who were involved in papers that they cited in that. And there's a lot of new stuff. The other cool thing is that to make sure that Siri was not screwing up, the people involved in the study were not interacting with Siri directly. They were speaking the Siri command, and then someone else would then type in the command manually to make sure that it wasn't being getting screwed up by, like, I'm sorry, could you say that again?
Right.
Because they wanted to get consistent results.
Would have been funny if they did it like they do in when they're making movies. Have somebody pretend to be Siri.
Yeah. They actually call it the Wizard of Oz protocol. So there's actually a human behind it that was writing everything.
That's so funny. This was a AAA study, by the way, the AAA Foundation.
Yeah. We need to do a study with kids in the car, because I'm sure the kids have come off worse than Siri.
Actually, the worst thing is the Mazda 6, apparently. For some reason, Cortana's worse than Siri, Siri's worse than Google Now, but nobody's as bad as a Mazda.
Yeah. Well, the signature thing that they were calling out is that too many systems, Siri included, aren't flexible enough to simply say, "Hi, send a message to Bob, tell him that I'm running 10 minutes late, and I'll see you later." Most of them require you to speak that in a certain way and put things in a specific order. And even if it's smart enough to say, "I didn't understand that, tell me what time you're meeting this person," that's not. Dump that one request and then keep on driving. It really is continuing to be engaged with the software. So,
yeah, very interesting. The least distracting vehicle is a Chevy Equinox. And even it has moderate distraction.
I said stop hitting your brother. Put that back down. Don't do that. Stop kicking the seat.
I don't see Ford Sync on here, oddly enough. Most people will be using, I presume in the next few years, will be using Android Now or Android Car and or Apple Car in there. Yeah. I mean, who's going to – you'd be crazy to design your own. By the way, Category 1 is the same as listening to the radio. The best cars are Category 2, which is about the same as talking on the phone. And the worst, at a 4.6, it's about the same as uploading social media. So driving a Chevy Mazda is about as hard as uploading a picture to Facebook while you're driving.
We talked about this a couple of years ago. I remember when I was in high school, the people I was driving with, they would spend their entire time with their head turned sideways trying to dial the radio station to find a song they liked, and they'd find it by the time it was ending. They'd have to find a new song, and humans are just endlessly distracted.
It would be nice if they had tested CarPlay and Android Auto just to see if there's any improvement using a system designed specifically for in-car. Second phase, the foundation found Siri's high complexity and low intuitiveness.
That's why we need self-driving cars, Leo. That way it doesn't matter if we're distracted.
Then we can upload all the social media we want. Here's a picture of me not driving. Here's another picture of the other guy not driving. All right, our show today brought to you by something you might want to do in your self-driving car. Read a magazine on your iPad. Texture. Now, you've heard me do ads for a great service called Next Issue. This is rebranded Next Issue. They've changed their name to Texture. It's Texture powered by Next Issue. It is fantastic. Some spectacular new features. It is simply the best reading experience around. As a Texture subscriber, you read all your favorite magazines anytime, anywhere, on your tablet or your phone. And it's like an all-access pass to the magazines you love. And I have to say, I love reading magazines, but very few magazines have more than one or two articles I want to read. So this is the best way to do it. You get everything. Fortune, Fast Company, Newsweek, Rolling Stone, Wired. There's always an article or two I want to read in Rolling Stone, but I don't need the whole magazine. There's always something in Vanity Fair I want to read, but I want to read the whole of that magazine. The next time you get on an airplane, you'll be thrilled. You'll be thrilled that you have Texture on your iPad. They automatically download the magazine, so you've got it with or without Wi-Fi. Find out more. In fact, try it out for free for 30 days at texture.com/MacBreak. Very much like you're reading a magazine, same layout, same pages, but you also get bonus features like videos that you don't get in a magazine, which is really nice. And you don't get all that clutter in your house, and you're saving a few trees, too. They even have a new top story and new and noteworthy sections. They're updated 24/7, help you find the articles you want to read in the magazines you've got. I love it. You're going to try it? I hope you will. 30 days free. Texture, TexTure.com/MacBreak. Download the mobile app and get started building your library. It's just exactly what you want. I love magazines. I really do. But, who has time? to read all of that stuff. You just want one or two articles, you got it. Texture. Or you can have, if you want to read it cover to cover, you can do that too. So Apple says to the judge, we cannot, since iOS 8, get inside of those phones. So don't ask us to do it. The Department of Justice says, well, that's ridiculous. Apple doesn't even sell that software. They continue to own it. They're only renting it to users. You could do anything you want. This is Apple is in a tough position because, of course, it's one of their chief market advantages is this respect for privacy. And since iOS 8, this strong encryption that they've built into the iPhones, for 90% of the devices running iOS or higher, granting the Justice Department's request would be, quote, impossible to perform. Is the DOJ right? Apple should change the software? I don't think anybody here would say that.
No. What's to stop China from saying we want access? And Russia
right.
from saying we want access.
And yet, anyway, to play devil's advocate, you operate in a country, you have to abide by the laws of that country. Ultimately, doesn't Apple have to give in? If that's the, it's not the law yet, we should point out.
And that's, remember, I forget if it was Pakistan or India or both of them, where they demanded BlackBerry put in Squid servers so they could intercept BBM messages.
And they won, by the way. The BlackBerry did it. And, of course, you know, you're always going to be in that position where countries are going to say, well, we want to see the source code of your so-called secure server. I guess there's nothing to say about this except...
It just shows you how pervasive this problem is.
Yeah.
That really the only defense that a company like Apple has is to do what they've just done, which is to say that, look, even we go ahead and subpoena us. We will send you the document that certifies that we have no ability to look at the data inside a phone. And that's something that the company is going to have to look at, particularly as they're trying to sell phones into other markets. If our government starts passing laws insisting that NSA and other agencies get to have some sort of ability to look in on this technology, that makes that technology harder to sell to other governments and to other peoples. So this is going to get worse before it gets better. And I hope this becomes questions in the presidential debates to come.
I think it was even more complicated because they said, yeah, fine, but this is an iOS 7 device that we want to look at. And then Apple said, you know, that's a huge burden. If you start sending us all these older iOS devices, we have to devote time and energy, and that's a lot of work to get into them. And they're like, well, show us that it's a lot of work because you just said there aren't that many running it anymore. So if you're running iOS 7, upgrade is also the lesson you get from here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Speaking of this, the cyber... Security Information Sharing Act is making its way through the Senate and is not so far off from getting voted on. This is something Apple and many other tech companies opposed, although according to Boing Boing, Facebook both opposed it and in private encouraged members of Congress to pass the bill. The bill would allow the government, some say, to collect information, personal data from these companies. The idea is, since companies are under cyber attack, that they should be able to freely share information about those attacks with each other and with the federal government without risk of liability. And I think, you know, on the one hand, these companies would love to eliminate any liability that would come from sharing this kind of information. But on the other hand, they realize now that in this current climate, this is a very controversial thing to do. The Princeton Center for Information Technology Policy sent an open letter to the Senate urging them not to pass the bill. Edward Snowden, of course, has called for CISA to be scrapped. Apple, Facebook, Google, all saying, you know, we don't want this bill. Although, again, I have a feeling that some of them would love to have the... There's got to be people inside of all of those companies saying, gosh, you know, legal immunity for violating privacy laws would be a good thing. We wouldn't have to worry about lawsuits. The lawyers are saying, you know, are you sure you want to oppose this? CISA would allow voluntary sharing of private information with the government and would make it impossible for you to sue. It would also neutralize the Freedom of Information Act, so you wouldn't even know if this information is being shared, and you wouldn't be able to find out. So I was mistaken on Twitter. I thought it had already been passed by the Senate. It hadn't. It had come out of committee. So the Senate is close to voting. The bill then we'll have to pass the House of Representatives, although given the makeup of the House of Representatives, it doesn't look like it's going to face much opposition there. Then reconciliation, and the president says he will sign it if it crosses his desk. Brian Krebs in Krebs on Security says, while many business leaders fail to appreciate the value and criticality of all their IT assets, I assure you today's cyber crooks know all too well how much these assets are worth. And this yawning gap in awareness and understanding is evident by the sheer number of breaches announced every week. That, we'll grant you, is true. I mean, I think there are reasons why you would want to promote this, but people like Krebs and other security mm-hmm. experts say it wouldn't really help the issue. It would just make privacy harder to come by. Keep your eye peeled, and if you have an opinion, which I think you perhaps do, you can go to your local member of Congress and let them know. Of course, our Senator Dianne Feinstein is the one who came up with the bill, so I probably won't write to her.
I forget who said it, but there was someone who just said, imagine any time one of these laws comes up that it's your nudie pictures that are being disclosed. And then think how you feel about that. And then use that as your determining factor.
Yeah. Apple stores are going to send some of your phones off for off-site repairs instead of trying to fix them in store, and they will give you a 16-gigabyte loaner. In other words, something you really won't want to keep while they do so. This is to reduce wait times at Genius Bars. The new repair program for Apple for iPhone 6, 6S, 6 Plus, and 6S Pluses will allow the Genius to determine that the phone should be shipped to an off-site repair center if the device is unable to connect to iTunes, if the phone will not power on, or if the phone does not boot up past the Apple logo. It takes a lot of time to try to fix this in store and do a DFU and rebuild and all of that. So if the customer agrees to have it sent for off-site diagnostics and repair, he or she will be loaned a 16-gigabyte iPhone 6. Jeez, to add insult to the injury, to use for
the interim.
The original
plan was to loan them a BlackBerry just because they remember how good they have it.
It is the first time they've done loaner units. Usually, though, if it's really dead, won't they just swap it?
Yeah, it depends on what they want. But you go on the internet, go search up and do. You can do a lot of this troubleshooting yourself.
Yeah, you might want to.
Yeah.
I don't know. They said it takes about a week to get the phone back. So for a week, you have an iPhone 6 with 16 gigs. So
the watches still get sent out now. So if you've had your watch sent out, you know what the process is like.
Right. Do you get a loaner watch?
No, you do not get a loaner watch yet. I don't think there's enough.
I can't live without my watch. I don't know.
I'm not sure you want wrist hair and dead skin cells that don't belong to you on your wrist for a week. I wonder how much of this is just to speed people through the process of getting in for a service and then getting out for service, and how much of that is the resources that they have available now in every one of these stores. It's easy to see all the resources that are in a flagship store, but your average mall Apple store, if you've been in the back room there, there's just not a whole lot of room to do anything really sophisticated.
Remember when the HTC A9 came out? Everybody posted pictures on Twitter showing how much it looked like an iPhone 6. They'd move the camera to the middle. It really did look a lot like the iPhone 6. HTC says, no, it's Apple copying us.
Yeah.
Let's get this straight.
I'm so glad they're standing up for themselves. Finally. Someone speaking truth to power.
It's not us copying them. That's just quinky.
The A9 looks less like the last HTC than it does like
the A9. Isn't that funny? It looks more like an iPhone than it does like an M9.
Phil Mickinson did a great editorial on Android Central where he just said this is the last thing HTC should be spending their time or energy on right now. They have so many other things that they need to worry about.
I suspect, going to go out of the phone business. They have a VR helmet, which everybody says is the best on the market, the Vive. They have a partnership with Steam. Maybe just do that. Forget this phone stuff. It's tough.
I love that. I mean, I've loved their phones since the Trio Pro.
I loved the M9. M7, 8, and 9 were great phones. Beautiful.
And I like they're doing different things with the cameras and stuff like that. Yeah. Not all of them work, but they're at least very different. And also, I mean, my stated opinion is that I would just give so much love to a company. If their reaction was, Well, it's a really great design.
Yeah,
people
good.
Really like it.
We like it.
I've heard a lot of people said that. Gosh, if I would switch from Android to iPhone, it's like I would just like them to say it's a great design. Our IP lawyers say that this design is perfectly legal for us to sell, so we're selling it. Next question.
Next. Like,
all right then.
If Sergey and Larry are listening, just accidentally drop $1 billion on HTC's porch.
That would be nice.
Yeah, you won't even miss it.
That worked out so well with Motorola.
Yeah.
Well, actually, don't buy them. Don't buy them. Just give them enough money to make a poor phone.
Wow.
Yeah, it did work great with Motorola, didn't it? Sometimes,
Andy comes up with these things. It worked great for the hardware, but it didn't end up with a long, lifelong commitment.
Which is a shame.
Motorola hardware
That's a great. Shame. Although, now I have to say, and we've talked to a lot of people. Jason Howell reviewed the new Nexus phones, which are from LG and Huawei, not Motorola, and everybody seems to agree these are the best Android phones ever. So, did you decide to keep the 6P or the 5X, Jason?
6P.
You're going
6P is absolutely my jam.
Yeah,
for sure.
Me too.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Who was it we were talking to says, no, I'm going with a 5X. They liked it was lighter, smaller screen. Was it Ron Amadio? I think it was.
I have no idea.
I think it was Ron Amadio.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
Sounds like it was probably Ron.
Yeah.
They're both great devices. The 6P is just kind of the step up and really kind of covers all the bases for me anyways, from a design perspective.
And Andy, you reviewed it, didn't you?
My 6P 5X review is coming up late this week, early next, because I'm going into town tomorrow to do my camera tests of both of those phones.
Good.
I love them. I love them both. It's like, some people on Twitter were asking me about my opinions, so they're in the same position of asking, figuring out whether they want to go iPhone or Android. And I had to go and say that, isn't it lovely that we're now in a place where we've always had a choice, but now the hardware is top notch on both devices. The operating system is top notch on both devices. The user experience top notch on both devices. And in my case, it can come down to something as stupid and trivial as I just think that Android M is prettier and more interesting to look at than iOS at this juncture on a phone.
Ooh.
And that's truly what it could come down to. That I just still don't like the new the iOS 7.8.9. interface. I just think it's very, very bland and very, very bleak. And I think that the Android interface now is just very, very exciting. And
how about the cameras?
I've only done some trivial tests of both of them, and they're really, really close. I put up one side-by-side comparison, and just without saying that one was better than the other, just saying, well, which one do you prefer? And the opinion was about 50-50 between the 6P and the the iPhone 6 Plus, 6S Plus. And looking at them both, I can't really say that one of them did a poor or better job than the other. It really is just, do you like this? This in this one particular shot, the Nexus was a little bit warmer than the iPhone. In this particular shot, there were some reflections that had a little bit more detail in the iPhone version of it. So it's going to be a lot of fun being at the Boston Public Library tomorrow in the public garden to really spend a day shooting with both of them to see if there's any difference really between.
To be fair, that's a miracle for a Nexus camera.
No, absolutely. True. They haven't been
also because remember that Nexus, they've always had this sort of secondary goal of making an affordable, you buy it, you own it, unlocked phone. Back when nobody was making unlocked phones, they were priced for to buy and own. So they would like the Nexus 5, which is my current Android phone, doesn't have a great camera, but it's made up for by the HDR Plus feature and what they do on the server. Doesn't have a great processor, but it's good enough. These are the first ones where they just seem to say that we're just going to make super awesome, great phones, and maybe they have.
Because I was all excited about the iPhone 6S Plus camera, but I find I don't do that many pictures with my camera phone. So it's maybe
really?
I'm making maybe a bigger deal of how important the camera is. If they're roughly equal, that's good enough for me. You use your camera all the time, Jim?
It's the only camera that I really use. I've got one of those DXO ones, but I always carry around this camera, so that's
yeah,
what
but
I use.
I do too, but yeah. For some reason,
you're in front of the camera all the time.
I don't take a lot of pictures anymore.
You have the new iPhone camera commercial, Leo, with Lake Bell?
Oh, should we play that?
It's on point.
All right. Before we do that, though, I just want to point out that the new Windows phone may have the best of all of the cameras, Have you seen, this is an image from the 950 or 950 XL.
They've always had spectacular cameras.
They always have. And it looks like they'll continue to do so. It's really a shame about Windows Phone because
I know.
Yeah.
Great hardware.
I mean, this is a case of good enough. I want consumers to have the best camera in their phone they can possibly have, because mm-hmm. in 15 years from now, they're going to wish they had a better picture of their kids' first steps than they do right now, which is why I love how Android allows cameras to write raw data. So, for instance, with the Samsung phone, if you put it into Pro mode, it will not only give you access to settings, but it'll also write an Adobe DNG file alongside it. I wish that Apple would allow Camera Raw out of the iPhone as well, because there might come a day 10 years from now when you're going to wish that you had all that extra data. Hell, five years from now.
Yeah, that's a good point, yeah. And although the most important thing now is really the processing that's happening in the camera, at least for now. Yeah. Yeah, let's see if we can find that Apple iPhone app. Do you have
YouTube.com/Apple.
What is it again?
YouTube.com/Apple.
Oh, really? What's this YouTube thing you talk about?
Well, Leo, if you sign up for YouTube Red, then.
Yeah, you know, I'm a little worried. I still don't know what's going to happen to us with YouTube Red. Everybody from Patrick Norton and our fans on down are telling us, oh, it's not going to be any difference. It's going to be fine. We shall see. This is the ad-free of YouTube that launches tomorrow. Here you go. This is the iPhone 6S camera ad.
This is iPhone 6S. Not much has changed with the camera, except how you take a photo. Find a photo. Share a photo. Ooh, mom's gonna love that one. Your photos themselves have changed, too. They move now. So photos of your friends can do this. And the ones of your family can do that. And your pet photos can do... Wait, that's your pet?
Yeah.
I dig it. Oh, now your screen is the flash. Say cheese for yourself. And the camera shoots video in 4K. So everything you shoot looks amazing.
On that 1080p screen.
You can even shoot slow-mo in HD. Nice. Oh, yeah. Watch this.
Stephen Curry of the Warriors.
Wait for it. Splash. So, yeah.
All right, that's a great ad.
Blake Bell was a good choice for this round of commercials.
Interesting, though, they highlight the stuff the software does as much as they do the stuff the camera does. It's interesting.
It's such a big deal, not just the post-processing, but in terms of what happens to that photo after you take it, what tools are there to make it a better photo, and then what can you do with it after you have the image that you want. Android is way, way up there, but the third-party editing tools for iPhone are really spectacular. Fine-tuning, but also the creative stuff. I'm starting to think that maybe it's raw. I'm going away from doing side-by-side comparisons, publishing them, because they're starting to become really irrelevant as these cameras become closer and closer to each other. If there is a little difference between, let's say that hypothetically the new iPhone takes pictures that aren't quite so punchy or interesting in color as the as a Samsung phone or another one. They have the Photos app is so good at making it so easy to adjust that photo the way you want to without the color, brightness, saturation. Just, do you want the light to be more lighty or do you want it to be less lighty? Okay, do you want it to be more colory or less colory? Are the colors a little bit off this way or a little bit off this way? Great. So you can make it in 10 seconds, you can make it exactly like the way you'd like it to look at. So it's just phenomenal what you can do in the iOS ecosystem.
Yeah. But it's kind of the point I was making is that as much as I want a good camera, they're all pretty good. If you get a late model, they're all going to be good enough for most of the stuff you do. And none of them are going to be great in low light. They're all going to be a little grainy in low light.
You have your fancy Sony, Lou.
And that's why I have my fancy Sony, exactly. Yeah, if you really care about that kind of thing, or your DX.
I took the big camera test for the 6S Plus was New York Comic Con a couple of weeks ago. And I took so many pictures there that they're in my Lightroom library in one folder with all the pictures that I took, including with the $1,000 camera with the $900 lens attached. And under good conditions, there's so many instances which I just can't really tell a substance of difference between the iPhone picture and the quote real unquote camera. That's certainly not true of most of them, but the fact that a camera phone is now that good is just so mind-boggling.
Yeah, yeah. We live in wonderful times, especially when you compare the original iPhone or the original iPod with the newest iPhone.
Grandpa.
Yeah. They're really coming a long way.
Pictures from that iPod kind of suck.
Yeah.
Good as the original iPad.
They weren't the best. You know what? I think they just forgot to put the opening for the camera lens. That was the problem.
Well, I got to say, the mirrored back makes it really, really easy to line up selfies. You just have to keep holding it like that to keep the selfie. That's all.
I don't know. My mirrored back, I look like a ghost. It's so scratched up now. All right, let's take a break. And if you would, prepare your picks, gentlemen. That's next on Mac Break Weekly. But first, I've got a tip for you, something called Unity. It sounds like Unity with a U, but it's Unity spelled with Y-O-U. And it is a way of unifying all the media on your computers at home so that you can watch them, see them on your iPhone or your iPad. Access everything you've got anywhere you are, at home, at a friend's house, at the office, traveling. And it's free, so there's no reason not to. Go to getunity.com, getyounity.com/twit, and download it for your desktop. It's very fast. I have to say it. I've never seen anything quite so fast at indexing my movies, videos, photos, and music on my desktop. You can do it on multiple computers. It will read your Lightroom and Apple Photos libraries and photo albums. You can automatically, if you do it on multiple computers, merge the iTunes accounts and libraries. So all the music on various computers will be available to you on the internet. Yes, you can it's password protected, so it's secure. It will auto-discover GoPro videos. And you can even use AirPlay to stream it from your phone or iPad to your TV. Create your own private personal media server. It couldn't be easier. And it's free. Did I mention that? Getunity.com/twit. I don't mean free as in freemium or free they're going to try to upsell you. It's free. Getunity.com/twit. Works really, really well. And if you want to get all your photos and videos and music and everything on your phone so you can show them to family and friends, there's no better way. Getunity.com/twit. Andy Iannocco, your pick of the week.
First, a quick correction. I think I called the website where I got my shaver recommendation. I said that wrong. It's actually thesweethome.com. But it's a recommendation for thesweethome.com for things that are like not really subjective. Like this is the Bronze Series 7 razor. Nice. That I bought. Again, my old one was crapped out. The one that I bought 2 years ago for $50 or $60 was so weak it just can't get through my beard. It was just terrible. So I said, I'm sick of both of these. So just the Sweet Home or something like that, whether it's a skillet or a hot air popper or something like that. It's like either I spend 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months obsessing over features and learning all about shavers, or I just say, whatever the Sweet Home says, that's the one I'll buy. I'm sure it'll be good.
Did you get the one where it goes in the charger also will clean it?
It's got right. You put it head down. As a matter of fact, this morning I was leaping away from my desk and running to find my phone because I could hear it buzzing. I was like, "Oh my god, I got to get into the phone!" And it was this in my bathroom.
Yeah,
I think we do a cleaning cycle.
You buy these cartridges, and it does quite a few cleaning cycles. And then it's got alcohol in it. It cleans it. And I don't use an electric razor, but I got one for Michael, our son. He's almost 13. He's starting to have a little, you know, and he doesn't, you know, does it maybe once a week or something. He hates the smell of the cleaner, though. So he won't let me clean it. I like it. It makes it smell fresh. Like
it smells like, you know, the barbershop that my dad used to take me to when I was a kid. So that's fine. But I mean, this really is like the nicest razor I've ever.
Oh yeah, they're so
good. Had. I mean, it really does just go zoop right through it. I knew that something had to give when I noticed that I was using the crappy underpowered razor that I bought a couple years ago. I noticed that it was missing like the last like rows. That it just could not get to this stuff. I started to get, it wasn't like the long hairs there, but I was getting like in 2 months time, I would have like a full like weirdo, you know, line of beard like down here. And
yeah,
so
you don't want it was that.
Definitely worth the money.
No, you definitely
But the recommendations for the Sweet Home again, for cameras, I will go to the obsessive thing. Well, here's what, do you want handling? Do you want this? It's hard to like make one recommendation. This one is I'm done. I have this 2 days later from Amazon. They got an Amazon credit for the recommendation, and it's just that simple.
I was going to start to say this sounds like the wire cutter, but it's from the wire cutter.
Yes. It is wire cutter.
Yeah.
That's why I keep getting them confused, and also their Twitter account name is different from their actual site name. Their site name is actually Home Sweet Home. Excuse me. The Twitter handle is Home Sweet Home, and so it confused the heck out of me.
The site name is TheSweetHome.com.
But my iOS pick is Zen Pinball, which has been around for a while. It's a pinball simulator that has a store where you can buy extra pinball tables. And they just came out with a Bob's Burgers pinball game and an Archer pinball game using original voices and sound effects from both of those cartoons. And it's fun as hell.
I bought Zen Pinball ages ago, so it won't cost me anything, but that's awesome.
Yeah,
you have to buy those extra.
Those are each tables. Each of those two games is $1.99. They also have a Family Guy game, but who cares about Family Guy? they have characters keep making appearances, and it's pretty damn fun. Nice. And also, it's just a great
look how real it looks.
Simulation.
That's the game. Yeah.
The physics is like I'm right back there in 1992 at the arcade and playing Adam's Family pinball with Raul Julia and Angelica Houston. They have that table too. I think it's a good $1.99's worth of entertainment.
They also
have
Star Wars. I see.
Yeah, they keep doing licenses. The other cool thing is that the Archer pinball game happened because somebody on Twitter said that it would be an awesome thing to have. Then someone who works for Archer on Fox said, "Oh wow, that would be awesome." And then they got hooked up. Then the Zen Pinball people, "Oh wow, can we actually do that deal?" And truly, that's why this thing got created, because people on Twitter thought it would be a good idea, and it turns out that both of these companies are fans of each other.
Nice.
And then the love happened.
And you know what happens after the love. Jim, do you want to recommend something or another rock and roll album, anything on your mind?
I'm going for music.
Okay.
All right. So this time I'm going to recommend Godsmack.
Oh.
Godsmack is a great band. I mean, some people might consider them they're not metal, they're hard rock. And they use a lot of they use all open tunings on their music. So it's a lot of chugging music. So Sully Erna, who's the lead singer for the band, also plays a little bit of guitar. He was the drummer for the band and a great drummer. They're a band out of Boston. It sounds like a lyric. That could be a good lyric if you were a band
out of Boston.
We were just another band out of Boston. Godsmack is a great, great band. You listen to them, they pick you up, and it's just straight ahead rock and roll. Really, really great stuff. They do have some really nice slower songs, but they're not like ballads. They're really deep songs. They're great, great stuff. But if you just want a band that you can put on and drive and, you know, bang your fist on the steering wheel and tap your foot. A lot of people contacted me about my pick for Blackstone Cherry and said that they loved it and they wanted more like that. So Godsmack.
They were just in Moncton. I can't believe I missed them. But they are coming to Edmonton and Calgary. In fact, their big Halloween concert will be in Calgary. And then on to Missoula and Yakima. Oh, they're going to play the Warfield. That'd be a nice theater to see him in San Francisco.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Nice small theater.
I'm going to see them then. When is that?
That is November 6th. Be a great theater to see him in. I mean, instead of a big stadium, that's a nice, intimate. You'll be deafened right away.
Right away.
Mr. Rene Ritchie, your pick of the week.
So because of Apple TV being on pre-order now, I thought I'd pick a couple Apple TV things. And the first one is just a really simple stand, and it's from Studio Neat. And they make things like the Glyph and the Cosmonaut Stylus and a really talented group of people. I believe they're in Austin, Texas. And this is just a very small piece of wood that's custom cut, made in Austin for the Apple TV remote. And it's just designed so that you don't put your Apple TV down on the sofa or on the table and lose track of it, but you put it in the stand and you'll always be able to see and find it. And I forget, it's like $14 or $18 or something, or $12, really inexpensive.
Well, this is a good idea.
It's a great idea. It's really good looking. If you listen to the audio and the video, it's Adam Lissagor, a Lonely Sandwich, doing the audio, which is always delightful. So it's, again, super, super simple. If you're looking at something to charge as well as stand, then, of course, 12 South has you covered already. And they have a version of their high-rise stand, which is what they sell for the iPhone, designed for the Apple remote. And you put it right on top of the Lightning charger. It goes right into the wall, charges up your Apple remote when you're not using it or when it's low on batteries. And either one of these, just depending on whether you want a built-in charger or not, they'll both serve you really, really well.
You probably want to run. The Apple earnings call has begun. Looking at the live blog here from the Wall Street Journal. They won't release the earnings until about 15 minutes.
Yeah, and then the conference call, yep. I think, is in 45.
Yeah. We should expect to look for?
iPhone results. The first full quarter of iPhone 6S, 6S Plus sales.
Ah, all right. China sales will be interesting. Remember, Tim Cook said nothing to worry about there.
Actually, I don't know. Are iPhone 6S and 6S Plus included in this, or is it just the tail end of that quarter? It's probably just the tail end.
Don't know. Yeah, it would be the tail end, wouldn't it?
Yeah, because it came out very late in September this year, maybe only a week or so.
But you'll see at least something about that. All right. And I think we all can agree our pick of the week might be an Apple TV. If you haven't yet bought one, you can get one at the stores. They're going to be in store Friday, Saturday?
Something around that, yeah. Apple hasn't said for sure, but they said end of the week.
Yeah. End of the week. And Twitter is also doing its results, and third quarter revenue is up 58% year over year, but the stock is tanking, down 9%. Apparently, the analysts expected more or better. Thank you, everybody. We do this show every Tuesday, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1800 UTC on twit.tv. You can watch live, you can chat live, but if you can't do that, on-demand audio and video always available after the fact. At twit.tv/MBW. If you'd like to be in the studio, we'd love to see you. Tickets at twit.tv. Just send us an email. That way we'll make sure we'll have a chair out for you. Thanks to Jim Dalrymple of The Loop, loopinsight.com. Always great to see you.
Thank you.
The Beard. Mr. Rene Ritchie from imore.com. Sorry we missed you while you were in town, but...
me too.
You going back tonight or...?
No, in a couple days.
All right. If you feel like coming up, you know, we always got to always borrow a cup of Wi-Fi. And we also want to thank Andy Anaka from the Chicago Sun-Times. Always a pleasure. Enjoy. We'll look for your review of the new Nexi phones in the Sun-Times soon.
Excellent.
Thanks to all of you for being here. We'll see you next time. Remember, MacBreak Weekly, put that on your calendar. Download it. Subscribe. Oh, also want to remind you that we only have a few more days for our T-shirt. If you go to teespring.com/twit, this is, I think, the prettiest T-shirt we've ever done. Here it's loading up here in the fabulously speedy Edge browser. Load up any minute now. Just a couple of weeks left to get it. This is designed by our own Anthony Nielsen. And when I saw that, I said, that is cool. We have a variety of sizes and styles for men and women. There's a Next Level Women's V-neck, an American Apparel Crew, Fruit of the Loom Tee, and they're all $20, very affordable. We make a little bit of money, but really it's more a limited edition thing. We like to put out these T-shirts and give you a chance, maybe for gifts, perhaps, Halloween costumes. Two more weeks to order, only available till November 10th, and once it's done forever. Teespring, teespring.com/twit. We always love it when we see people in our twit wear in the studio. Thanks for joining us. Now back to work, because you know what? Break time, it's over.